Let's change the world together. Welcome to the Snapcast, the podcast for all nonprofit professionals, bringing you interviews and amazing ideas for nonprofit leaders.
Hello, this is Mickey Desai, your host for this episode of the Nonprofit Snapcast. I am very honored to have Darren Davis on the line with me. Darren is the executive director of the Nature Conservancy in Georgia. He leads the team working across Georgia to protect land and water, to tackle climate change, provide food and water sustainability, and to build healthy cities. A native Georgian, Darren came to the Nature Conservancy from the Georgia Department of Natural Resources, where he served on the State Water Plan Leadership Team, launched a water conservation campaign, and directed an environmental school improvement program. He is the sponsor of a 9-state initiative conserving longleaf pine, serves on the executive committee of the Captain Planet Foundation, and led the Outdoor Stewardship Coalition, which helped establish the State Conservation Trust Fund. Darren is a graduate of the University of Georgia and an alumnus of the Institute for Georgia Environmental Leadership, not to mention Leadership Atlanta Class of 2020. Darren, thank you for joining me today.
My pleasure to be here. Mickey, thanks for having me.
How long have you been with the Nature Conservancy, Georgia?
I joined in 2010. I was brought in as the Director of Conservation for the Georgia program.
Got it. And in your time, I'm sure you've seen a lot of changes. I think the biggest thing I want to talk about is how has COVID-19 affected your mission objectives over the last 2 months?
Spent a lot of time thinking about that. And the first thing I want to share is my own personal experience with green space. I'm an Atlanta resident. And the thing that has been my salvation through all of this is getting out when I can and where I can to walk in the various parks that we have access to in Atlanta. And what that has shown me, one, incredible demand for green space in this state. People are hungry for it and appreciate it. What it's also shown me, based on the volumes of people that I've seen, is that we don't have enough of it. And recognizing that the populations of Georgia are expected to grow in any scenario, my hope coming out of COVID is that we are able to double down on our commitment and the state's commitment to increasing green space for all the residents of Georgia.
That was going to be one of my other questions. You know, we are seeing a lot of newcomers that are hitting the trails these days all over the state, not just within the city. How is the Nature Conservancy welcoming and engaging new people to various elements of nature?
Yeah, that's a great. We've been very creative. I'm incredibly impressed with the team in Georgia and the way we've thought about interacting with our donors. As you might imagine, you know, without strong, committed foundations and individuals and corporations in Georgia who support our conservation mission, we wouldn't be as effective as we are. And we need to stay in contact with those people during this time, recognizing that that can no longer be face-to-face. So we've created virtual field trips where we take people into the field with some of our science staff, touring preserves, for example. We've also had some really thought-provoking sessions with our aquatic scientists talking about dam removal and how we can improve the health of river systems and giving our donors a firsthand look at that. In terms of more broadly and how we think about this, the opportunity to engage people, when you think about a state of 9 million people, the majority of which, a little over 6 million, live in the metropolitan Atlanta area, conservation means a lot of different things to people. And what we've found is that by having a program in Atlanta, one that has an incredibly ambitious mission of protecting 3,500 acres of green space and improving the water quality of a incredibly damaged river here in Atlanta, we are attracting new and interested people to our work that otherwise didn't realize that we've been working in this state since the 1960s. On land protection, mostly around the rest of the state. So real opportunities to continue to engage with people where they live and then introduce them to the broader needs around the state.
But it sounds like that in some weird way, COVID-19 has allowed you guys to underline the importance of conservation on a much larger scale than you were before pandemic.
I do think it's allowed the whole world to take a pause, whether mm-hmm. something that we intended to do or not. And in that pause, I think it's asked all of us to think, what do we value most? And, you know, you see increased rates of people gardening, increased rates of people bird watching, lots of things where they can engage with the outdoors and they can use the time they have available that they might not otherwise. What it also shows us, though, is that they have a true value for that. And so we're trying to match that value, not only in the way we bring them opportunities to engage virtually right now, but also to really understand from them, how can they take that value and put it forward into our work and get out in the field when the time is right and continue to support us in our land and water conservation effort.
Mm-hmm. As leader of our local chapter, and is that the correct term? Is Georgia, the Georgia chapter is the local chapter of the Nature Conservancy?
That's right. That's right.
So you have to see a lot of leadership stuff happening at both a national level and a local level. How do you manage change at both of those levels?
Yeah, that is a really great question. Part of what has made us such a strong organization over time, Mickey, and the Nature Conservancy has been working across the country. We started in New York in the 1950s and have since expanded to more than 70 countries around the world. And the way we've been effective is by working in place, really getting to understand the issues in a particular place, the people who live in that place, and how we can partner together with those people to make the kind of change and to realize the kind of results that we all want to see. That theory, that way of being, that practice still exists very much as core value in the organization. And so before COVID, what you would see is a focus on broad scale outcomes. You know, what does it mean to have a maximum amount of land protected for all the values that provides across the world or around the world? What does it mean to have river systems healthier for drinking water, but also for the many other benefits around the world? And then looking very concertedly across the organization at what is our role in climate change? You know, we own a significant amount of land, and any of the investments we've made to date are going to be negatively impacted by climate change. So enlightened self-interest, if you will, just in terms of the way we think about our own land holdings, require us to be very cognizant of climate change. But likewise, so does it require us to think about the work we do at the policy level and in communities, thinking about how communities can adapt to climate change. So think about the coast. We know that we're seeing record amounts of coastal flooding, whether it be from hurricanes, but also sunny day flooding. And how can we help a local community plan in a way that prevents that the kind of risk to people over time? So the framework is typically established at the global level, and then we are asked, recognizing what we know about the people and places in the states we represent, to determine the most effective strategies we can put in place to embrace those goals and to apply that framework.
Right. One thing I wasn't aware of that is, it sounds like you're actually working with local communities to help them do some planning on the ground in their own communities.
That's exactly right. Other than the coastal example, which has been a priority because of the reasons I mentioned around coastal flooding, the work that I mentioned in Atlanta, we have some of the deepest community engagement that I've ever seen in the Nature Conservancy, because if you're going to work in Atlanta, and particularly in a part of the city that has a lot of socioeconomic challenges and have disproportionately suffered from previous decisions, so strong environmental justice concerns in those areas like landfills and wastewater treatment plants, if you're going to imagine a future where some of those lands become green spaces open to the public, you are also imagining impacts to the local community that you want them to have a voice in. This is not a function of, let's establish a green space, increase property values, and therefore remove people from their homes because they can't afford to live there anymore. We are working super closely with the residents of those neighborhoods, asking them what they think about these ideas, how they see, if at all, the benefit to having more green space in their area, and then how can they help us shape it so that it actually becomes an economic upside for them instead of a downside.
Right. It sounds like the Nature Conservancy's efforts are actually more relevant than ever, as opposed to the other way around.
I think it's definitely true that our approaches have necessarily evolved over time. And I'd like to think, as an organization that is growth oriented, always trying to learn and lead, we will continue to adapt over time. Part of what we've learned, though, is that any decision we make with partners is going to have implications in a local community, and we need to be sure that those local communities are working with us in the way that we consider those decisions.
Sure. I have to ask the next fundraising question is, how has the Nature Conservancy pivoted its fundraising and your general outreach efforts? And how do you handle the in-person meeting part? I mean, how do you navigate all that?
Yeah, that's a great question. So lots of creativity, and I'll say a little bit more about that in a minute. But let me first say, because we have such a long history in the state, we really are fortunate to have significant supporters across the board, foundations, corporations, and individuals who have given to us during the course of our campaign over the last few years, who have indicated an interest and a want to continue to support us in the near future, including considering, in some cases, emergency funding to help us right now as we, you know, recognize the fluctuations that all nonprofits are encountering in their donor revenue at this time. In terms of how we communicate with them, you know, some of them, it's been very direct. They've reached out to us and they said, hey, so we expect you're probably going through a hard time right now. What could you use? What do you need? What do we need to know? In other cases, we have leaned on them, particularly really close insiders, and shared with them very directly what we're seeing in terms of the impacts and asked them to support us. In those cases, Mickey, it could be a phone call. It also is more often than not a Zoom call. But then in terms of just general, what I would call keeping donors engaged, helping them remember the value of our work and understand to a greater degree how any contributions they make do impact the state and nature in our state. We're doing some of those creative things I mentioned at the beginning, where we're taking them on virtual field trips and introducing them to our scientists to talk more specifically about their work, all using the power of video, whether it be through Zoom or through our social media channels.
Fascinating. Fascinating. I'm sad that we're running out of time. We'd like to try to keep as close to 15 minutes as possible. So what are you looking forward to as things move forward here? I know that we have a lot of question marks around what the new normal is going to look like, but what do you think is going to happen? What are you hearing from your major donors? And what do you think the future of the Nature Conservancy is going to look like as we continue to work past pandemic?
I really do believe, Mickey, that the world has learned a lot in this time, and that individuals have learned a lot in this time about what really matters. And going back to what I said early on, I think one of the things that people have determined really matters and that they need in their lives is nature, whether that's for a very necessary mental health break as a walk in the park, or whether that's for more of a global need in terms of helping address pressing climate change issues. I feel like coming out of this, there's going to be a greater understanding and appreciation for the value of nature, and hopefully people will come along and continue to support that value by making their own donor contributions.
Yes, sir. I hope so too. I got to thank you for being available for this particular recording. If it were appropriate, and if a listener wanted to be in touch with you or to learn more about the Nature Conservancy's current efforts, how would they get in contact with you?
Sure. Two easy ways. Let me start with our website, nature.org/Georgia. And then my email address is Darren, D-E-R-O-N _ Davis at T as in Tom, N as in Nancy, C as in cat.org.
Fantastic. Darren, thank you for taking the time for making this recording with me today.
Thank you, Mickey. I appreciate the work you're doing.
And to our listeners, thank you for joining us for this episode of the Nonprofit Snapcast, a production of the Nonprofit Snapshot. We value your feedback on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you listen to the Nonprofit Snapcast. Your feedback makes us more searchable by others, and we hope you're all being safe and having a great day. Thank you.
This has been the Snapcast. Thank you for joining us.